Good evening. Pardon me. This is Mae Brussel. The name of this program, this broadcast, is World Watchers, and it is broadcast number 723, October the 14th, 1985. There's so much in the news about the current terrorism that I'm just briefly going to address myself to it because I don't want to spend much time on it this evening, and I expected a lot of terrorist activity while Ronald Reagan was president, because it's a big smokescreen, and those of you who have had my broadcasts, heard them for years, know what I thought about his time as governor in the state and the agent provocateur kind of activities that he was capable of doing. This past Sunday, yesterday, the Jews from San Francisco and the Peninsula area all demonstrated in front of the Soviet Union, the embassy there, with balloons. And there was a rabbi, Cartoon, C-A-R-T-U-N, from Stanford University. And they were all protesting the fact that Jews cannot leave the Soviet Union and don't have freedoms there, which I don't deny do take place. There may be some of that or a great deal of it. But these same people wouldn't think of going to Seattle and demonstrating in front of the Aryan Nations trials or going to Salinas in front of the National Alliance offices of a future Fuhrer, pardon me, or demonstrating anywhere against fascism, whether it's up in Oregon with that Rosh Nish affair that's taking place and is becoming more visible all the time. They are silent about what is happening in this country, and the only leverage for protest is against the Soviet Union at all times. I spent the last 6 days reading articles from the Oregonian. A friend has been sending them to me regularly, and there is a 36-part series. It's actually book length that you can send for. I'll print out the address on the sheet that accompanies this broadcast, and for those of you who hear it on the air and don't have pencils handy, get your pencil or write or call me. Write to the Oregonian, 1320 Southwest-Broadway, Portland, Oregon, 97201. They reprinted about 9,000 copies of these articles, I understand, but they may reprint more if you ask for them, and they're absolutely brilliant. This work is the kind of work that Jeff Gerth has done for the New York Times or Seymour Hersh, and there are some good writers. Pete Carey, who did the story on Otto von Bolschwing, could have made a 36-part article on that if the San Jose Mercury had allowed him. But the Oregonian allowed a team to write this expose. It took a year, and I called one of the people who participated in that to offer some information and to ask for some more information about the activities up there. And I'm outlining this huge amount of material, and then I'll condense it for you. It involves opium traffic, hashish, prostitution, a poisoned cow that by feeding it poison, they hoped that the Bhagwan would die a slow death from drinking the milk from the cow. An interesting experiment, maybe not new, but going there. Arson, mass Haldol, migrating people from New York. Many of you heard about that the time they took over the town of Antelope. And their own private police force that works with the Central Intelligence Agency, with Contras, the mercenaries or freedom fighters from El Salvador, and electronic devices, the largest amount ever seen in any operation, maybe in the United States, brought in. The genius who set this up was brought from London. This has to do with German banks, Swiss banks, and British banks, similar to the way Jonestown was set up, and then the Mercantile Bank in Dallas, Texas, and an interesting team of attorneys and people from Texas. It involves salmonella poisoning, mass poisoning, about 900 that were poisoned last year. And a woman from Beverly Hills, California, Francois Reddy, who was born in Paris, who's become the new head now that Sheila has gone to Germany and Switzerland. Her name, Sanskrit name that they gave her, was Premhasya, H-A-S-Y-A. Her husband, her first husband, Mr. Glazer, helped build the Atomic Energy Commission's project at Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and worked with Wernher von Braun. He's probably the most prominent Jew to support Ronald Reagan, and she's taken over this position up north. Interesting facts about this family: that this was her first husband, then she married a Mr. Ruddy, who produced The Godfather and a few other movies with her. They bought the home of Joan Crawford that she formerly lived in, a $2 million home for sex parties and sex encounters. And they have their own doctors, police force, crematoriums, and they are directly linked to a lot of questionable offices and agencies, and I'm trying to put this all together and condense it for you. Now, this kind of horror story is equally as bad as taking one person off a cruise ship and throwing him over the side of the water. As a matter of fact, there's so much anger that by the fact that Mr. Mubarak in Egypt didn't keep the four hijackers there or protect them when they were in Egypt. But there's no anger over the Rajneesh saying that they overdosed a man from New York City who came out, overdosed a Haldol, and they have 64,000 acres up in Oregon, and they threw him out the window or door and let the animals eat him or the body rot. They didn't even give him any kind of a burial or send him home to the East Coast where he came from. So that this double standard, one isn't right and the other isn't wrong, but this double standard of hypocrisy is so terrible. And the isolation of these stories, mostly in the Oregon area, not making the wire services, leads me to think that this is a microcosm for what the United States and the world, they're going to become, the various states and countries around the world run by these kinds of people, because this hasn't anything to do with Oregon. It has to do with British money, German money, Swiss banks, Texas lawyers, Chicago outfits, New Jersey connections, strong New Jersey connections, and they left Pune, India, leaving like $4 million worth of back taxes, literally sweeping their money out of there, a flight capital, gold, and so forth, bringing it to the United States. Now, just one or two quick comments about the Egyptian hijacking thing, just a opinion about it based on what I've read these past few days. In the first place, Mr. Mohammed Abbas was known to the Israeli government. Gene Kirkpatrick had a story in the Chronicle today saying that the Israelis knew a week before that this ship was going to be hijacked. So why didn't they do anything? Secondly, Mr. Mubarak knew that this person, this American citizen, had been thrown over the side, had been shot in the head, and he let the hijackers leave Egypt. Why? I don't think he wanted anything to do with this operation. He probably knew it was a CIA operation and put him on a plane and let them go. And he's furious that the Americans intercepted them. He can only be furious if he knew that they had arranged or gave a blink that it go ahead and then trapped them on the way out. Another point, that Italy knew that Mr. Mohammed Abbas was involved. The United States had tape recordings. They very nicely could pick up all these conversations of his plans of arranging the hijacking and working with the terrorists, and they released him. Why did they release him? For the same reason Mubarak did. I believe that they don't want another CIA embarrassment in their country if they can help it. They had Frank Turple and Michael Ledeen and Mr. Paul Hensi and the CIA arranging the Ajah lies and stories about the Bulgarians. They're struggling with that trial there. The CIA is involved over and over again with disinformation and violence. And I don't think the Italian government, friend or no friend, wanted any more of it, just any more than Mr. Mubarak did. Now, the San Francisco Chronicle has a story about Mohammed Abbas, the man who arranged this, being close to Arafat. They have a picture of him, and he has close associations with Dr. George Habash and Dr. Wadi Haddad. Well, if you read the Rebel article I wrote on the murder of Larry McDonald that came out in February of 84, I talk about Mr. Habash and his connections to his brother in Chile, and Mr. George Habash was the leader of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine that worked with our Central Intelligence Agency, worked with Larry McDonald of the John Birch Society and Western Goals, a military intelligence network linked to Lebanon. And these people worked with Dr. Habash, Mohammed Abbas, who set up this particular thing that happened on the ship. And I believe it was a provocateur thing, which I'll mention in 1 or 2 seconds about that. Another point is that in Egypt, the various people, the PLO, are demonstrating and yelling at Mr. Mubarak, calling him an agent. They have signs or they're screaming, "Americans are the enemy. You are an American agent." And they went by, they want him at the grandstands and went by where he was. Well, he is an American agent. He's the fellow who had dinner with George Bush or lunch and went to the National Security Council, flew home, sat next to Mr. Sadat, who was gunned down, and Mubarak has been a tool of our Central Intelligence Agency and close to the powers that be. And while it took place in Egypt, after that, he washed his hands and didn't want any more. one article in the paper said that there was a threat on Ronald Reagan's life that he would now be on the hit list. And the person making the threat is Abu Nidal. Now, Abu Nidal almost fatally killed a Jew in London in June 82. And that was the excuse for Alexander Haig and the intelligence community to tell Israel to invade Lebanon, if you remember that whole scene. And then Mr. Nidal very nicely leaves England, and nobody made a fuss about that. He was involved in that, Abu Nidal. So along with Mr. Habash and Nidal and Mubarak, you have people who are, in fact, involved with our intelligence community, and now they can set Ronald Reagan up to get rid of him if he doesn't die fast enough of cancer. They have George Bush in the background, who's heavily involved with all of these people as former CIA director with Chile, with Mr. Habash's brother, the Chilean CIA, the drug dealing, the assassination squads because of the Orlando Letelier murder in Washington. Bush is heavily involved with all of these people, and now they may threaten Mr. Nidal. It's interesting, is threatening Ronald Reagan when he has been an agent provocateur to trigger the excuses, I say, for Israel to go into Lebanon in 1982. And the British, when they let him leave, there wasn't this outrage. Why isn't there outrage against Britain when Nidal was there as against Mubarak, who let these fellows leave Egypt? Now, Yugoslavia doesn't want any part of it either. They got rid of Mohammed Abbas. I think that Yugoslavia and Egypt and Italy understand this was a provocateur situation. And also, William Casey and Caspar Weinberger, our Secretary of Defense, didn't want Ronald Reagan to send in the planes to intercept. They would have liked them to go off into the wild blue yonder. You notice we haven't picked up the terrorists in Lebanon that killed the American sitting on the TWA plane. And we never went after the people who shot down the Jewish athletes at Munich, because the intelligence community not only worked with them then, but they worked with the same teams at the time they were supposed to, in quote, secure the Olympic Games in Los Angeles. Luckily, the Soviet Union didn't appear, so that saved all the provocateur violence that would have taken place there. But they don't want any part of this. Why are they all turning their back on us? I believe that this was a great diversionary, that Ronald Reagan has pulled a trick out of the bag. I don't think it'll work, and it may boomerang on what can happen to him and happen to us if you pull it just one too many times. All you had to do is watch the morning news, the NBC, and Brian Gumbel and the men from Washington saying that Ronald Reagan is so strong, he stands tall, and that because of his decision to intercept this plane, he will go to Vienna and talk to Mr. Gorbachev as a giant of a leader. I'm just rephrasing their words, that this man is such a great leader. This has nothing to do with Star Wars. It has nothing to do with atomic bombs being placed on missiles. It has to do with a man who was put in by the advertising agencies, by the studios. It's a Cecil B. DeMille production, except our team players don't want to play anymore. They've had enough with the Aja scene. They've had enough provocateurs, action and reaction, and I think that we're going to see a different attitude among our friends if we set up these situations and make them be the fall guys with us. Now, that's more than I want to spend on this subject right now. I'll do more, but those names jumped at me as I read the news, and most of the week I wasn't even trying to dwell on this thing. It was so disgusting. But I was working on the ashram up in Oregon that is much more dangerous than the one Jew who was shot in the head and thrown over, wheelchair and all. What is going on in Seattle with the Aryan Nations, the 10 people that were arrested, the 11 who are literally going to go free with a little bit of testimony and one that's free, and where their money is going and who it's going to should make everyone in this country nervous and anxious that they can get away with what they're doing. And there isn't a word of comment, yet people come up and want to talk about the terrorists. When I was down in L.A. this last week, a neighbor across the street came over to visit a doctor who's retired and immediately brought up, "What do you think of this?" And I said, "Look, you vote for Reagan, you get what Reagan does. This is the activity of provocateurs, and if you feel comfortable with the man, he's your man, he's not mine. And if you don't understand that the Rajneesh up in Oregon are more of a threat, or the National Vanguard, or the Aryan Nation, or the Brotherhood, if you don't know that they're more of a threat to you than the things that you're talking about, then you're falling for what the system is giving you. And then, as I said many times, you deserve what you get. And I showed him a mountain of articles on the Rajneesh. They hardly know who he is. And said, why aren't you concerned with what happens in America? They talk about killing somebody and throwing him out in the fields. Isn't that just as important? Obviously, it isn't. And the media conducts what people think and say. And as long as that's allowed to happen, the situation just gets compounded. Now, for the remaining 45 minutes of this broadcast and next week, I'm going to do a two-part series again on the murder of John Kennedy. That's something that always interests various researchers and people around the country, and the links to international Nazism taking off to another place where we've never been before, to share this information with you now, and then some repeat to remind you of the connections. And then when I finish the two broadcasts, I'll make a very clear chart for you to see and study those interconnections. I have it now, but I'm not going to rattle off the names. Now, a month ago, September the 9th, I did what was the first part of this particular subject of Nazi terrorism that connects to our intelligence community, to the Odessa Network, to drug dealing, and to plans for future genocide. I referred to a broadcast that was in the Los Angeles Times called Neo-Nazis Enact a Not-So-Comic Opera. That was the title of the article that came out August the 8th in the Los Angeles Times. And it's about a reunion in Germany of Nazis from West Germany, Italy, Holland, Belgium, and Sweden. It involves murders, bombings, bank robberies, arms trafficking, dope running, and other crimes, which, again, gets no attention. I just get sick of hearing on talk shows and discussion shows something like the PLO, and not these people who work for our Drug Enforcement Agency, our Central Intelligence Agency, after the war, worked for the OSS, the CIA, and so forth. So this one article tells about the links of Nazis in Europe to the Bologna bombing in Italy, which was one of the key bombings to set link the international intelligence community of the United States, of the drug enforcement agencies, to the death squads in South America, and to the terrorism in Europe that spread in Europe. And I talked about this article that linked the particular people to the Munich Oktoberfest, where a large amount of people were killed, 13, and the Bologna bombing when 81 were killed. And the largest part of the group that attended this meeting of terrorists, I referred to Karl-Heinz Hoffmann. He has 400 members of what is called the Paramilitary Sporting Group. Now, his magazine and his group is similar to our survivalist. It's similar to the sporting, outdoors, climbing trees, climbing over fences. It has to do with sports like a chair at San Quentin for extermination or gas. The electric chair has to do with comfort or decorating a house. Their sporting group and their survivalist group are attack groups to overthrow this country and to do mass genocide. And I referred to another group called Westland New Post, and their purpose is genetic and cultural changing of the races to make people, the white races, survive. And their links to NATO, and Alexander Haig was former head of NATO, and Lord Carrington, the associate and partner of Henry Kissinger of Kissinger Associates, is the current head of NATO, and how they are patterning their work after the Gestapo and their Bureau of Zionist Affairs. And they're heavily linked to Lebanon, to these very terrorists that I'm talking about that were involved in this particular action, which has a double meaning in a lot of ways that can implicate people to turn against the United States. You see, Italy, Yugoslavia, and Egypt are turning against the United States. And the United States will be the fall guy for a lot of actions that happen. And then in that article, I linked Karl-Heinz Hoffmann to Gerhard Frey, the publisher in Germany, and his relationship to General Walker, which I want to go into again in terms of Walker and the American Volunteer Group and the death squads we have in America and the death squads in Europe. Not the early Frey Corps that killed off politicians in order to make it possible for Hitler to be elected, but the current death squads there and the current death squads in America. And many times I have cited, it's just a short article, there's more about it, the Houston Post, March 30th, 1981, the story of the international right wing that was exposed, uncovered, when a fellow named Manfred Roeder was arrested. And he was involved in funds for Iran, for the Middle East, for the Palestine Liberation Army, and he is directly linked to Karl-Heinz Hoffmann in Germany, and also, in addition to Lebanon and his contacts in Lebanon, the Middle East, and his relationship to people who did the Munich Oktoberfest, the bombs that went off, and so forth. He's directly linked to Canada, to Ernest Zundel, and to Liberty Lobby and Willie Cardo. And up in the Idaho area, the Aryan Nations, the Brotherhood, and the Order. And in 1981, March 30th, an article came out about this particular fellow, and that was Reagan was shot March 30th. The same day that this came out, March 30th, 1981, John Hinckley shot Ronald Reagan, and Hinckley was part of the Posse Comitatus, the order, the Nazi group in the United States that's linked up to the Nazis in Idaho and the Aryan Nation. So that there was this near coup in the United States where Reagan survived. In the meantime, now he has several cancer operations, had his third one this week. And I have talked about Manfred Roeder and his connections, also his diary in letters he got in jail in 1983 where the tip-off to say that Joseph Mengele had drowned. I've referred to Roeder and Hoffman, and I'll go back to them and chart their connections to the Aryan Nations in a few weeks. But I just want to get now to a story, the last one where we talked about this was from the LA Times. This is from the New Times. It's written in the Soviet Union. It's similar to Time magazine, called The Hoffman Affair. And this came out a few months ago. And it's an extensive article, more about Karl-Heinz Hoffmann. And the article begins by saying the threat from the right no longer exists. That's what the Bonn government is saying, Helmut Kohl and so forth. But it does exist. Neo-Nazi numbers are growing. And the Federal Department for Safeguarding the Constitution ignores these records and the figures. They have them and they do nothing. And this is a charge that the organizations of the Hitlerites feel that they're in their element because Karl-Heinz Hoffmann's military sports group, even though it's one of many, is very powerful, and the government in Germany is ignoring it. And as I say, Karl-Heinz Hoffmann links directly to the Oktoberfest bombing, the Bologna bombing, and then that goes to Mr. Feeblecorn and agents of the United States government. So when I cite this first article as a starter, it came out in July 85. It has connections to Gerhard Fry, the co-partner with General Walker, the fellow General Walker called within 24 hours of when John Kennedy was murdered. And Walker had brought people from Munich, Germany into Dallas area for the purpose of participating in and covering up the murder of John Kennedy in 1963. Now, this article, I'm going to be citing sections from The Hoffman Affair that came out in July 1985. This article claims there is a current trial in Nuremberg of Karl-Heinz Hoffmann and his wife, Franziska Berkman, F-R-A-N-Z-I-S-K-A, Berkman, B-I-R-K-M-A-N-N. They're accused of murdering two people in 1980. This is 1985. The trial is going on, and except for the New Times, I haven't read anything about it in all the newspapers I have. If you see anything, send it to me. And the allegation is that the judges are not looking into his past. They're not paying any attention to Hoffman's past. They're simply charging him and his wife for killing two people in 1980. But the past of the person, of course, explains why they happened to kill this gentleman in 1980. Karl Heinz Hoffmann was born in Nuremberg. He studied graphics. He went to an art academy. He spent three terms there. Then he traveled to the Middle East, to Turkey. This is the home base, of course, of Ajah, to India. And the home base, again, I'm going into the Rajneesh and the contacts to the military, the munitions people, similar to Reverend Moon, and even the Nazis in India and in Pakistan. Of course, they're funding the Sikhs to make trouble in India. He spent a great deal of time in Middle East, Turkey, India, Pakistan. He had all the money he wanted, according to this writer. It was no problem. And whoever supplied the money had generous backing following his art school, when he went to art school and when he left. And at the beginning of the story, they said the money, the source of the money remains a mystery, that Hoffman is tight-lipped. And then as the article gets on, it tells about his being funded by Gerhard Fry, who I cited as being one of the most notorious propagandists who worked with Mr. Naumann and the gentleman who took over the Goebbels propaganda machinery at the end of World War II. And I'll do some more on that, update some other sections of a book I was citing before. In 1964, this is 1 year after the Kennedy assassination, I call it the United States coup, he set up his own business in a villa in Nuremberg, and he refurbished it with a lot of cash, bought a truck, a luxury Mercedes, and then he put away all the art and switched to politics, similar to Hitler being an artist and then switching to politics. In 1973, he established the MSG Military Sports Group. Now, 1973 is when the money went to Jim Jones in Jonestown, and I'll cite for you on the charts possibly what was going on in the world in 1973 when Karl Heinz Hoffmann set up his own military sports group, and it formed the nucleus for a future movement called the Rational Pragmatic Social Hierarchy, and it had a formula for Nazism, and the phraseology was really the superior white race and get rid of the mongrels, and so forth. Recruits came from beer halls, semi-criminal groups, juveniles, similar to what Hitler had, or our soldiers of fortune, our people, mercenaries, our Reagan's freedom fighters that are out fighting and killing and defending a handful of property owners. He and his wife set up a home, a fancy home. She bought him a very expensive villa. There's no background on her, really. But that military sports group started, and he began getting attention by advertising in Stern Magazine and Panorama and being on television, and he would attract attention to the police by being so far right. And by being that far right and fascist, he didn't hide it. He got the people that he wanted, and he could step up their military training, and they practiced fascist greetings. And instead of saying Heil Hitler, they'd say Heil Hoffmann. And by 1974, Stern had published a report on them, and they posed for cameras, and the gamble paid off because he began to be flooded for applications for admission. Now, there's a whole group of the Liebersborn that are 30, 40 years old that Hitler raised as children of the Gestapo, who would be qualified too, to get into a group like this when the time comes to set it up. Having that Nuremberg home too small, they moved to Haraldsburg. And that's where they began military practice and brainwashing the various members. And they were all brought together and given political lectures. They still are. And they were displayed on tapes and in person and meetings and practicing with their flag. And then they started singing the Nazi songs and Hoffman's manifesto, and his program for taking over the world and genocide is similar to William Pierce, who still is in business with the National Alliance in Arlington, Virginia, and was recipient in the United States of money from that bank robbery in Ukiah that I mentioned before that he can use and spend. This article in New Times says the contents of what was drummed in their heads was read over and over. Here's a quotation. The ultimate ideological aim is to create a world state of stability in general terms, and particularly in biological terms. And there was this Nazi thesis about race. This is what's so important about that ashram up in Oregon, is planning a biological warfare. There was a special cell, a bunker with gas masks, and they talked about putting salmonella into water. I think 700 to 900 people were sick. I forget which of the figure, will start with a smaller one. But poisoning of the doctor, three times he was in the hospital, Bhagwan's doctor, and planning to poison the master and take over chemicals to control people's minds and bodies to eliminate them or to get them to function the way you want is part of this. And Jonestown was the same way with its medicines. It was set up in 1973 with its medicines for huge community. And his strategic goals, Hoffman's, were to create many branches of his military sports group in other towns and put reliable people in control to set up units similar to cells of the John Birch Society. We'll take a one-minute break, and I'll go back into this article on Karl-Heinz Hoffmann, his connections and friends, and then link them to the United States intelligence community and our own operations.